Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here comes the pitch. Swing and a drive hit to deep left center. That ball's headed for the wall. It is gone! It's gone! The Aces win! Cody Decker with a game-winning two-run home run. And the Aces have walked off Sacramento. 10-9 is the final. Decker jumps on top of home plate, and his teammates jump on him. Unbelievable. Decker walking towards the dugout. He's going with a forearm bash. He's hugging his coaches, hugging his teammates. What a moment for Cody Decker.
Middays on the Score.
That is how you end a professional baseball career. Cody Decker is the guy who did that, and he has been one of baseball's more interesting characters Absolutely. During his career. Just because he's not playing, it doesn't mean he now has to cease to be interesting. I found that out. And he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. That was a hell of a thing there, Cody. That had to be just, I mean, indescribable.
It wasn't so much the homer. It was everything that happened afterwards. Immediately afterwards, it was a very, very special night, man. What can I say? It was you don't get many opportunities like that. That was a Roy Hobbs moment, except we, you know, it got us 4 games under 500.
All right.
what stands out about what happened afterward? You said that was meant the most to you. What was it?
Well, I crossed the plate. I told my teammates about 2 days before that I was hanging up that series. And told the Diamondbacks the day before, and when I say the D-backs were the most gracious and fantastic people about it, they were just so happy for me, and said they want to welcome me back whenever I want to come back. I can't thank them enough. But when I crossed home plate, our celebration, one of their pitchers on the other team said, "Wow, that was a bit much." So I crossed home plate, we're going just crazy. And I end up hugging every single player and coaching staff member for like long hugs, like almost passionate hugs, like we're gonna make out at the end of Major League after the Indians won the pennant type hugs. Next thing you know, I come in the dugout. I sign an autograph for a kid. I get drenched with Gatorade, which, you know, I'm not gonna lie to you, 11 years, that's never happened to me until that last game. And as I was leaving, the crowd was chanting my name, and the announcer said, "One more time for Cody Decker," and my whole team was in the dugout. I was wondering why they weren't going to the clubhouse, and they shoved me back out on the field for a curtain call. And I'd never given a curtain call in my entire career either. And the crowd was going crazy, and they didn't even know what they were curtain calling. They thought it was just for the home run.
Wow.
My teammates knew that was my last time on the field, and they were on the top step giving me a standing ovation. And we went in the dugout, and they all gave speeches to me in the clubhouse, and just, man, it makes you really realize, you know, there are no accolades in baseball that really matters. The relationships you build around with not just your teammates, but, you know, the fan bases and the cities you play in, you know, it's important to a lot of people. And it was just a surreal moment, really.
I referred to you as a Zelig-like figure in baseball, because every time I see your name, it jogs something. I'm like, well, wait, why? We just brought up his name before. Why was this? And then I looked, and I checked all these little points in time. Recently, it was your wonderful tweet about Adam Eaton that couldn't be more spot on.
Chef's kiss, my friend.
His comment about minor leaguers just needing to starve because it somehow makes them better players and people, because it did for him. And you called him a delusional a-hole, and you're absolutely dead on that one. It goes back to, you were the guy with Team Israel that brought the mascot, that brought your Joe Boo, the giant mensch on the bench, and the guy who pulled that long con on Jeff Francoeur, making him think a teammate was deaf. You were the same guy in all of those episodes. It's been pretty incredible.
Jeff's such an idiot, right?
But the best kind, you know, this is...
Yeah, no, no, he's the best. He thought that the prank was great until it really blew up.
What?
And at first, like, he was the best sport in the world. He was like, oh, it's the greatest prank ever. He bought us all steaks the next night. Then 3 days later, well, this isn't funny anymore, huh?
What?
And to which I'm looking at him like, I don't know, I think it's funnier now than it's ever been.
How did you, Cody, how did you know Jeff was going to be the mark for that prank? Was it a prank that needed a mark or a mark that needed to be pranked?
It was a prank that needed a mark. And what happened was, I'd done that prank 2 years in a row already. We never did it to somebody as high profile. The year before, I think we did it to a pitcher named Adam Ray. And how we broke it to him, it was after like 4 days. This one went on for a month. And we forgot that we were doing it until Jeff would be so stupid and remind us. I'm like, oh my God, this is still happening. Oh, this is brilliant. And the final moment was when I finally got called in the office by Pat Murphy, my manager at the time. We're in a tight game. We're up by one run in Tacoma, which is the Mariners' AAA affiliate. And we bring in Jorge Reyes, who, of course, Oregon State grad, not hearing impaired. He comes in, and he strikes out the side with bases loaded, nobody out. And we come in the dugout, just high-five and forearm bashing, going crazy. And Frenchie runs in, slams his glove down on the bench right at his feet, slaps him on the leg, and huge thumbs up and over-enunciating, saying, great job! Way to go, buddy! And I had to leave the dugout and sprint to the clubhouse, which is right behind the dugout. And in there was my pitching coach falling down laughing so hard he was going to have a heart attack. And we were losing it. And then finally he's like, this has to end. This has to end. We have to. This is interrupting the baseball game now. We have to tell him. So I started doing interviews and I made the film. And it was the best. And Frenchie took it so great because he's the most fun, loving teammate you could ever have. Absolutely adore him. You know, he was a guy that had been in the big leagues at that point for 9 years and has to take this AAA job, which, you know, to me is not a step down, but, you know, to a guy who's been in the big leagues and a former All-Star and who has been in the World Series, I can totally understand them being bitter. And at no point was he bitter. He was just so, so great.
Now, if you're enjoying listening to Cody Decker, it's good because one of his post-baseball jobs is going to be as a part of our Radio.com sports family. Both Cody and his wife, if you remember Jennifer Sturger, are going to be a part of Radio.com. So I guess, hey, welcome to the family, Cody. It means we're going to hear from you frequently.
Oh, man, what a time. What a time. You hear these silky smooth tones, man? You're going to hear them a lot now. Based on my voice, the show's going to have a lot of sex appeal.
And your other job is a meaningful one as well, returning to El Paso, where you were a chihuahua for a time, working for a civic group there that's going to help some at-risk youth have exposure to sports.
Yeah, that's like a passion project for me. El Paso is a city where, you know, that really kind of changed my baseball life. Not in that it made me a better player. It just, I got to get in this love affair with this city. It was just, at the time, El Paso had this terrible reputation, kind of an up-and-coming city that just desperately wanted people to see it as a beautiful city, and man, is it ever. It is a fantastic city. The stadium is amazing. Our crowds were, you know, we would sell out every night, 10,000 people. At the time, we joked that if somebody got called up to the big leagues, I'm like, oh man, getting sent down to San Diego, huh? Tough. We'll miss you. But it was just it was awesome, man. It's so the amount of support I got there, and I would come and play there these last 3 years as a visiting player, and I would get standing ovations every at bat. I would get chants when I was at the plate until my home, and then I would start doing it. That happened like 3 times. But it's just I love that city and a chance to really give back because, you know, at the time I was this guy who'd never been to the big leagues, who was never really given an opportunity. And that city made me not care because I got to play in front of these people who just gave the most support you could ever dream of. And this is a wonderful chance to get back. We're going to build a top-of-the-line, basically a spring training complex. We're going to bring in a coaching staff that is just second to none. Joe Bimel, Brent Dean, we're bringing our program of Bimel Elite Athletics over there. We're going to have a top-of-the-line throwing program, hitting program, strength and conditioning program, a ton of scholarships for kids who can't afford it. Going to be accessible, and we're trying to get as many kids into college in El Paso, Juarez, and Las Cruces as we possibly can. And we want to make it a destination spot for pro ball players during the offseason. You know, come over here, train with us, and let us show you why this city is so worth your time and how beautiful it really is.
That's awesome, man. That's, you guys are going to lay down a couple of bucks for an Edutronic, for a Rapsodo, for some of these super slow-mo cameras?
Every one of the toys. Every toy. Pit tracks, Rapsodos. You know, you name it, we're going to have it. And I mean, Kaiser machines, just every piece of equipment you could ever need or use to get better. And we're very metrically based. Like, I'm very big on the detailed metrics, especially when it comes to a swing path, throwing programs. They're important, and that's, quite frankly, if you're not on board with that, the game is passing by because that's where it's at. And if you're not ready for it, you know, the old school mentality can still be a mentality, but it can't be your driving part of the game. You have to be able to adapt. And if you're not ready to adapt, that's going to be a problem. The game will pass you by.
We're talking with Cody Decker. He's on Twitter at Decker6. Must follow on Twitter. He is going to be of radio.com sports, which is a really cool thing. It's good for us. It's good for you to have his availability in that regard. Now, you have played everywhere, frankly, every continent and every place and every league, and you've played with a lot of different baseballs. When AAA changed to this current major league, whatever it is, have you noticed, did you notice, and what was being said about this ball?
Well, let me put it this way. I didn't know the balls were being made by Titleist until this season. Let me put it this way. If anyone thinks the balls aren't different, either you're stupid or you just don't care, because I led the PCL in home runs with 27 home runs in 2014. That was a good season. You know, played my ass off and put up numbers. The team leader on my team currently at the All-Star break has 29 home runs, and he spent a month in the big leagues. These balls are absurd. I've never seen so many home runs. And the best thing is, people always complain because the PCL has always been known to be a hitter's league, that cheap home runs happen. I play in a pretty hitter-friendly ballpark in Reno, but, you know, so there's occasionally a cheap one that goes over the right field fence, but now it's a cheap one going everywhere. And I feel so bad that I only got 80 at-bats this year. I didn't have enough at-bats to take advantage. I feel like I should have had 30 in those 80 at-bats, but instead I had 7. And I'm just sitting there going, man, I could have 300 home runs by the end of the season.
What would you do, because we're having a lot of conversation now that it's the All-Star break between, you know, the union and baseball and trying to get the CBA worked out. As far as on-the-field rules type changes, what needs to be done? What's the first thing on your list if you were tasked to, I don't know, alter the game? Because it seems like somebody's going to change it one way or another.
You know, there aren't a whole lot of rule changes I think need to come in place. They have been trying something in the minor leagues. In the upper levels of the minor leagues, and that's the extra inning rule.
Yeah.
And I kind of frowned upon it at first, where the inning would start with a runner on second base. After doing it for 2 years, it is exciting. It is exciting to play in, and it's exciting to watch, because what it is it's almost like making the extra innings a college football
overtime.
You know, overtime. So, you know, the team that's on, the visiting team has the option to either just go ahead and swing it or play the small game and bump the guy over to third and have a runner at third with less than two outs, forcing the defense to play in. It's really exciting. And if they don't get that run in, either the bottom half of the inning, the team could do the same thing or just try and hit him in. And they don't, you know, that run doesn't count to the pitcher's ERA. Some people are still not really on it, but I got to tell you, it is exciting. And for some reason, it makes those extra innings feel like they're going faster. And you know, the big complaint is always pace of play. I don't think the pace of play really needs to change. I think it's more the game needs to feel faster, because there's so much going on in the game that, you know, people that don't regularly watch understand. I think it needs to be more accessible to fans, and I think that rule right there would make a lot of entertainment.
Huh. Starting to sell me. I hadn't liked it that much myself, but hearing you talk about it, obviously play with it means something. What was the strategy that you guys used? Like, are you always coming home with the ball if, like you say, it's the bunt and then something up the middle or an infield in kind of thing? Like, are you always trying to make a play at the plate?
Well, I feel like if you're on defense in that if you're on offense in that top half of the inning, say you're a visiting team, to me, you got to play the smart game and get that run in. Because if you don't get that run in, you just gave the home team a significant advantage. So then it's almost like you failed to score the point, so instead you're kicking the field goal just to kind of give yourself a chance, and
right.
forcing your pitchers and your defense to play some serious defense this next inning. Because if you play great defense and you pitch, you still get to win the ball game. It's really kind of exciting. I'm telling you, I was really adamantly against it, but as time went on, it was pretty great. And it also gives you kind of an opportunity to save your pitcher's arm. And especially in the American League, this rule will be really fun, because people always complain about the DH and how small ball is not becoming a thing anymore and takes away the strategy. I disagree. This type of play immediately reintroduces strategy.
We were looking at what the Atlantic League is doing starting tonight. We knew that they were going to an electronically called strike zone. You call it robot umps if you want, but I think that would be a fascinating experiment with MLB involved and tracking everything. They are also, Cody, allowing you to steal first, just like a drop third strike. Any ball, any pitch that is not caught cleanly will allow you the opportunity to try to make it to first before the throw gets there. What say you?
No, dumb. I'm good.
Really?
See,
that's the first I've heard of it. I mean, I guess it adds more base runners to the game and adds more runs to the game, but I don't know. If we're still going to use the titleist balls, clearly more runs is not something that's a problem in Major League Baseball.
So we just found out about it this morning, and we're kind of working through some of the permutations of it. You got to figure that it won't happen all that often. Like, how many times
it
would
doesn't happen often, but it's normally out of laziness, and here's why I don't want it to happen. That puts a hell of a pounding on catchers. Now you're taking catchers who are in a more comfortable position just trying to receive pitches. Now they have to be ready to block pitches early in counts as opposed to a two-strike count.
Interesting.
That's going to put a hell of a pounding on catchers. That's going to shorten catcher lifespan.
What I like about it, though, is if the electronically called strike zone removes framing, or call it umpire fooling, and takes
yes.
that aspect out of what a catcher has to do, if they're not as concerned about, am I tunneling this upright? Am I receiving it properly? Am I giving them a long enough look? Maybe it's going to just change the way we think about catcher defense. They're going to have to be more athletic. It may be a burden on it, but then it's a much truer way of measuring a catcher's defensive ability.
I agree. It absolutely is. But, you know, the majority of catching is just receiving. I mean, a catcher's movements and, you know, blocking and throwing is far less impactful in the game than just their ability to receive and call a game. So the idea that doing this, putting the robot umps or, you know, the automated strike zone, one, that's going to, A, really help pitchers, because that strike zone's not really all that changing all that much per hitter. You know, Nate Freiman was my teammate. He's 6'7". And then I come in at 5'11". How much is that strike zone actually changing radar-wise? There's a couple little flaws in this. I think this is going to really help pitchers out quite a bit. I don't think the framing is going to help them as much as there's going to be some pitches called that are going to seem way up and out, way down and away, way up and in, that are going to be now official strikes that, you know, a couple years, you know, last year was a ball. Because think of where players stand in the plate. I stand in the back of the box about, you know, I'd say 6 inches behind the plate. So a ball crossing at my ankles might have crossed the strike zone at a certain spot. So there's no adjustment to be made. That's the problem. So there are no adjustments. It's not changed for certain players, not for certain strike zones. It's going to be interesting, to say the least. I'm interested to see the results as well, but I don't really see it helping as much as people think. And it kind of takes away a little bit of that. I mean, there's been a lot of people that have been paying attention to catcher framing and catcher metric. And it's honestly made it really interesting to see certain catchers catch balls a certain way, getting strikes that other catchers don't. And it's going to take away the biggest part of I'd say 60% of Major League catchers' game.
Yeah. So, Cody, I'm scrolling through your baseball reference page. I clicked over to the minor league and winter ball stats. The computer froze before I could scroll down through all the teams.
Yeah, I can give you all the teams in order if you want.
Nothing I would like more.
Peoria, Arizona, boom, AZL. Moved up to low A, Fort Wayne, Indiana, boom. High A, Lake Elsinore, California, double A, San Antonio, Texas, triple A, Tucson, Arizona, triple A, El Paso, Texas, Major League Baseball, San Diego Padres. Then I was in Omaha, Omaha, Nebraska for the Kansas City Royals, got traded over to the Rockies, put me in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was there for about 3 hours before they decided to fire me. Then I got picked up by the Red Sox, went over to Portland, Maine, beautiful city, loved it there. I was a bit of a mental wreck at the time, but I was still hitting a ton of bombs. Next year, signed with the Milwaukee Brewers. I remember at the end of camp, which is weird because I just played at the WBC, and I didn't get out all spring training. Felt a little shady. Then got picked up by the Mets, went over to Binghamton, New York, got to be a rumble pony for about 3 weeks. Got moved up back up to AAA over in Las Vegas. Had a great time there. Played mostly off the bench. Next year, signed with the Diamondbacks. Went to Jackson, Tennessee for 1.5 days. I'm okay with never coming back there. Then moved back to Reno. Been in Reno ever since. Signed back to the D-backs the next year. Went back to Reno, and I hit that home run, and I walked it off and came right to Tampa.
Clammers!
Well done.
Wow, and that's only affiliated ball, too. You didn't even count the time in the Mexican League and, what, Korea, too, right?
2013, went over to Culiacan, Mexico. 2015, oh, no, sorry, 17, went back to Culiacan, Mexico. They won a championship both years. What can I say? The Golden Juice strikes again, just giving them championships. Last year, went to Jalisco, Mexico. Golden Juice strikes for a third time, won them a championship, even though I was only there for a week. Let's not forget my short time in Venezuela. I was barely there, got hurt in my second game, and got about every ounce of type of food poisoning that's known to man. Went home about 14 pounds lighter. Let's not forget about 2011, I played in Panama, Sucre, Panama, in the Panamanian Winter League. Got really, really sick, salmonella, misdiagnosed, lost 17 pounds. If I showed you a photo of me, wow, I kind of looked good.
You're not recommending the salmonella diet, however. But,
oh, no. It'll kill you. I'm just really, really strong. No, but
isn't,
I looked good.
Isn't Culiacan, how do I phrase this? It's not the safest Mexican city, is it?
I'm going to disagree. Yes, it's where the Sinaloa cartel basically operates out of, but there are no other cartels challenging them. So it was really kind of pleasant out all the time.
So if you're in,
right, as long as you're in the green zone of the hegemon of the Sinaloa, life is good. Okay.
If you're in the eye of the storm, you don't feel anything.
Cody, this has been awesome, man. Thanks so much for hanging out. Looking forward to talking a lot more baseball with you as the season rolls on.
Guys, I cannot wait to be a part of the Intercom family with you guys. This is going to be a blast.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is somebody you're going to be hearing more from when it comes to baseball. Cody Decker on Twitter, at Decker6, the numeral. And judging from the response on the text line, more is going to be better. Because that's just add him to the list.
What a terrific little conversation.
Yep, and makes you and a really good line here from a texter who says that it shows you, he says, Cody is an example. If you love the game will love you back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That has been Cody's career, that's for sure. We didn't even
just
get into
not
him.
In the food in the countries he played.
Apparently, be careful what you eat in Mexico, Panama, and Venezuela.
Bacteria still exists. Doesn't matter how much you love the game.
Yeah, they don't care. They don't care
they'll clean
in that
you
regard.
Out.
But he is now a part of the Radio.com sports family, as well as his wife, Jennifer Sturger, who's going to be involved apparently as well. All very cool stuff. We are Bernstein and McKnight.
I'm getting over it. There's a little halo there. Blackhawks have made a deal. One a fan favorite has now been shipped out for someone no one's ever heard of, and everyone's angry for every reason you can possibly think of. Jay Zawoski has the anger. He's got the fire. He's got the passion. We'll check in with Jay on the latest Blackhawks reshaping of the roster. Next, it's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
He's still so young, he's not even, he might be 20 years old now, looking at, you forget
you know, because he's been around. He played 20, 30 games in the league as a 19-year-old defenseman, which is really difficult to do. So the big thing for young defensemen is just to keep getting better and to keep growing your game. So I was impressed with his performance last year when he came back from the World Junior Tournament where they won the gold medal, and he went to Rockford and was really strong down the stretch there. So he took it the right way and wanted to become a better player, and it's kind of the same story this year. You know, over the course of a year, you use a lot of defensemen. Even though we've brought a few veterans in, it's not like you just use six defensemen all year. I think most of the time you use probably 12, 13 defensemen with injuries. So there's the long range thing, projection is still great for Henry, and he's done something pretty unique coming in under the age of 20 and playing in the league as a defenseman.
Live with no regrets, Keys.
Not gonna work here anymore. That was Stan Bowman, the general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks, a couple weeks ago on this show, answering a direct question about the future of Henry Jokiharju. Fine, how are you? And he hinted that he wasn't going to be a part of the defensive rotation.
That sigh you heard was Jay Zawoski's.
Yeah. Well, at the bottom of the hour, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, your Western Conference champion. Chicago Wolves will open the season Saturday, October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. So it's Alex Nylander of the Hockey Nylanders who is now a Blackhawk. Jay, what is this?
That's a really good question, Dan.
Thank you.
Well, first I'll tell you about Nylander. We'll get that out of the way first. Very skilled. Comes from, like you just mentioned, the pedigree. His father is Michael Nylander, former Blackhawk. His brother is Maple Leaf star William Nylander. The issue with all Nylanders, as far as I know, is their work ethic is often comes into question. How bad they want it, what their desire level is. And I think that can be an easy crutch to lean on when production is inconsistent from offensive-minded only players. And all the Nylanders are that, especially Alex, the newest Blackhawk. But we're going to find out, because he was drafted by a different Buffalo regime, so I think a change in structure maybe hurt him a little bit. He's also been plagued by some injuries, but it looks like, from what Sam Bowman said, he's going to get a chance to make this team. And now when you look at the roster, there are a lot of forwards. Not a lot of great forwards, but a lot of forwards on this team. So it feels like something else may be coming. They are trying to move Artem Anisimov for... I don't know how they're going to make it happen. They're going to have to give something to move him, it looks like, at this point. And I was told they're trying to move, or looking to move, maybe, Brendan Perlini. Not quite as strongly as Anisimov, but they've got to clear some roster spots as much as salary here.
We heard Stan Bowman when he came back talking about a 19-year-old hanging in the NHL. Not a lot of 19-year-olds can do that at that position. Why move on from a guy who showed himself at least capable of not being lost as a 19-year-old?
Well, that's kind of my take on it, too, is you don't have to be, you don't need Henry Jokiharju to be the next Nick Lidstrom or the next Duncan Keith. Looking at the Blackhawks' organizational defensive core, they just need a guy who can defend. And that's what he was. I don't need him to be spectacular. If he's a plus defender who can add a little bit of offense, think about a guy like Nicholas Hjalmarsson, right, on the high end of that spectrum. That's great. Just because he's a first-round pick doesn't mean you need him to max out. And a couple months ago, I was told by one of my most trusted sources that the organization was just souring on Jokiharju totally. They didn't want that to get out because they were looking to move him. Now the deal's done, I can talk about it. But I don't know. I don't see it. For everything I saw in his 38 games last year, I saw a guy who, even at 19, like you mentioned, looked the part. He was able to... control the game. He had a lot of poise. He had a lot of calm. Joel Quenneville loved him. Loved him. When Colleton took over, that's when things seemed to change. And look, system fits. That's legit. That could be it. Maybe Colleton doesn't like the way Jokiharju fits his system. And if that's true, fine. Maybe he goes on and is a star in Buffalo. But to me, it was too soon to make this trade, and they didn't get enough back for the prospect they had.
I wonder why they didn't trade him to Quenneville then.
Yeah,
wouldn't he be interested? Wouldn't Joel be able to say, get me this guy?
You would think so. Maybe they're trying to pawn off one of those bigger defensive contracts on Dale Talon and Joel Quenneville, trying to tug at the heartstrings a little bit. Hey, want Brent Seabrook or Duncan Keith? Hey, remember those guys? They were great for you.
Makes sense to me.
Thanks, Rick. we were shooting this around the office too a little bit, Jay. Does the if they didn't like him, You know, if they'd soured on him after Quenneville left, should they have gone where they did in the draft, knowing they were looking to move him, move Joe Kiharyu in the first place?
Yeah, see, that to me was my first thought was, if you're going to trade him, why not draft Bowen Byram? Because even with Joe Kiharyu in the system, Byram is still your top defensive prospect, and he's a guy you could maybe plug in opening day of this year and have him on your top four right away, and then he'll be your franchise defenseman for the next 10 years. Maybe, though, the Hawks looked at it and said, we project Kirby Dach to be a better player than Bowen Byram over the next 10 years, so we're going to take the best player here at three, which I'll buy. I get it. But when you saw them make those trades this summer for Olimata and Calvin DeHaan, you kind of had to ask, what does this mean for Joe Kiharyu? And that's why you asked Dan Bowman that question when you did. He looked like he was boxed out, and now maybe Adam Boqvist and Nicholas Beaudin, to a lesser extent, have jumped over him in new organizational depth, so they felt them expendable. I was surprised they pulled the trigger on it so quickly and got so little back for him. That's all.
Thank you, Jay Zawoski.
All right, back in my hole.
You said that. I didn't. We have a texter saying the accusation that all Nylanders are finesse players with a bad work ethic. Does that apply to Ned Niederlander?
No. Movie tricks.
No.
Movie
no, no, tricks. No, 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 no. Never. No. Because, and as you know, of course, any Three Amigos reference is always well taken by
every
this
time.
Show. Wherever there is suffering, we will be there. This segment is sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories available in your local grocery store at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouthwatering water.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The only thing he's been able to pull out of the lagoon so far today is a shopping cart.
Quite a story, Dick.
Little bit of an update from Alligator Bob. He is in the canoe paddling around the
video.
Lagoon.
He's paddling.
He's kind of paddling around looking for the gator that has fascinated so many here in our fair burg. A lot of people lined up on the bridge looking and trying to find this 4 to 5 foot gator. Alligator Bob has said that this could take days.
What takes
quite
days?
A story, Dick.
Go get it.
Well,
just go get the alligator.
If you're the only guy out in the canoe paddling around,
put
I
another guy out there.
Might, well, no, there's only one Alligator Bob. Here's the other thing about Alligator Bob. I don't know if I respect this or if I want a more badass alligator catcher. He's out there alone in the lagoon in a canoe with a life jacket on. And I get it. I get it. You got to be safe.
But maybe you can't swim.
Like Steve Irwin didn't need the life to be more badass. Like, get out there. Take your shirt off. Like, fight the alligator. I want more. I don't know.
How did that work out for him?
Just pop that shirt. Well, it wasn't an alligator, though.
It was a stingray.
He had a stingray.
But the Humboldt Park Lagoon could be like 8 feet deep.
You don't know what's down there.
Right?
You don't know what's down there.
I guarantee you there's dead bodies down there.
You don't know what's
down there.
It's
been around long enough. There's probably human body parts down there, I would imagine. Thank yous to our guests today, Mike Florio and Cody Decker.
Hell of a
chap. Making his debut on these airwaves. That is not the last you will hear from him. Zawoski, Camp, and Diaz, Brian Gertsch, Kevbo had the updates, Len Casper. Tomorrow, Mark Grody is going to be in for me for the next couple days. And on Friday, you guys are all going to be, I'm missing Smoke Daddy.
You are missing Smoke Daddy.
Welcome to my world.
I'm missing Smoke Daddy.
It's going to be a hell of a day.
We're going to come back and do Transition with Lawrence Holmes next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.